presentation is by Dr. Paradelan. And again, it's on a topic that we don't often look at as Seventh-day Adventists, but I asked him if he would specifically look at our particular... Sorry, I can't talk and do other things at the same time. But Per, we're glad you're here, and we look forward to your presentation on Adventists and environmental health determinants.
Thank you. I shall start up where I have talked now yesterday and this morning. The order on these factors was a little bit different from what I had planned, but if you can read things from behind, we are together. I started here, and I shall just whip through these first couple of slides. I just wanted to link it to what I talked about yesterday and today, earlier today, statements from Dr. Pachauri and statements from Al Gore in connection with the Nobel Peace Prize. I shan't labor that now. But we end up with a sort of link of attitudes that we find in today's world. The environmental focus was there at the with the Brundtland Commission report, and it really became a very much vital focus in our world today. And then we have this concept of that we are in a human family. We've had two world wars in the 1900s, just in little Europe, and around the rest of the world. On which day do we not have a war in the world? But this new concept that we are a family together, which indeed is very biblical. The concept of globalization, yes, it has its negative sides, but it also means that we are together in the same boat. We are sailing together. We are not separate. Changes in ethics and values, yes, you have that issue. How do you use your automobile? How do you travel? If you have a company, do you run your meetings on the net, or do you send everybody around the world all the time? Issues like that are coming up. And, of course, in how you separate your waste products, etc. Public health is a vital factor in this context. I mentioned earlier how the doomsday book scared me in the 60s, and how I'm today perhaps more scared with the way we are using the so-called peaceful application, the civil application of this wonderful thing of nuclear energy. What shall we do? We can ignore, or we can do something about it. I'm coming to where I really want to act today. Let me take you to a farm up in Norway. This guy here, Erik Eid Hole, runs an energy farm. He runs a series of seminars at his farm, focus on renewable sources of energy. Our forefathers knew how to live in harmony with nature. We have to relearn this skill, was one of his big axioms. And it's bioenergy-based burners, CO2 post-burning, heat pumps, geoheat, biodiesel, and so on. He has a number of interesting things where you can reuse some of our wastes. And I mentioned some of these earlier, and I should just flip over that and get to what I wanted to get to. Well, let's take Mohandas Gandhi in, of course. Why are the Indians vegetarians to quite an extent? Well, this has to do with the view of animals. And we back off a little bit because the animal activist movement has not done all just good things around us. the militancy of that movement makes us stand off to some extent. But yet, there is some truth to what Gandhi is saying when you're reading the first chapters in Genesis. And right over in Poland, we have Isaac Singer, Nobel Prize in literature. I say, unless we stop treating the animals the way we do, we shall never find peace. He has some real profound statements on this. And this is something that people can understand. Now, some of you going back in history, when Harvey, was working in the Battle Creek Sanitarium, he got a good help from Upton Sinclair, who was really writing as a forerunner of socialism in America. decrying the work climate for meat industry workers in Chicago. But it ended up as a book promoting vegetarianism on the basis of mistreating animals. And we've had a number of people taking this up. And there is a fascinating statement from Mrs. White in one of her letters in connection with her own battle, as you know, over whether she should stop eating meat. And she talks very candidly and openly about her battle with her own taste buds, as you may remember. And there's this Catholic lady then who brings her to the concept, the conclusion, as she says it, "I shall no more be a customer with a butcher. I want no more meat from dead animals on my table." Sounds like an animal activist, doesn't it? There were these elements present there too, but it took off on the health wave, not least through Dr. Kellogg's work and later research, not least, like Dr. Fraser brought out here. Let me get to this one again. Cereals used in animal feed for human consumption. This could feed nearly the entire projected population growth. Now, if suddenly we've left the health message and gone into ARDRA, haven't we? You can see how those two belong together in this context. Raise awareness of the pressures of present increasing population growth and consumption patterns on ecosystems. I remember how the woman who was the leader of the farmers union in Norway was incensed on a TV program one evening because we had started importing maize, corn and beans from Sudan rather than from the US for as food for pigs, so that our pig steaks could end up a few cents cheaper on the table. And she was incensed about this. The Sudanese people need their own soybeans. Why should we let them go through our pigs? And people are understanding this issue. Let me go at it from this point. The Salvation Army, what do you think? You think of social work, don't you? This is their place in history. The Pentecostal movement, what do you think of them? Their teen challenge centers for young, displaced young people, people in the drug cultures, their gospel centers for rehabilitating alcoholics. They do a tremendous work around the world now. The Blue Cross Society, a temperance movement that is very strong here in Europe, with their dependency rehabilitation centers. It's even said that all the temperance organizations really only work with this one thing, forefinger, except for the Blue Cross Society, that also help people. The Lutheran state churches, with their city mission work, their NGOs, with church aid, and so on, and we could carry on, and not least the Catholics, with their international work, and of course with their history of starting the health work in modern society by opening the monasteries to the sick. Yes, yes. Then what about the Adventists? Now, a little while ago, when Monica and I were making one of our latest records, in a break there in the studio, we were sitting together with our producer and technicians, and they looked at us and they said, you're Adventists. Yes, we're Adventists. Now, I'm sort of wondering what are and who are the Adventists. I've sort of come to the conclusion, he says, that when you sum it all up, it really amounts to Sabbath and salad. Sabbath and salad. That's what it's all about. And it struck me afterwards, perhaps this is something to look closer at. We've got an identity of Sabbath and salad. Yes, we want a slightly different identity. But isn't this a historical trademark that today has given a market of possibilities? The salad. We're back to Dr. Fraser again. Our salad. Our plant fruit tradition for health enhancement and environmental altruism has given us an access in various circles around the globe to other churches, to the fastest growing church in my country, which is the Human Ethicist Society. strongly atheistic movement. The right to marry, the right to bury. But we can talk about the common issue here. I've been able to write in their church magazine about these things. Because they have the same concern. The Sabbath, the day of rest, tradition. What does it signify? What does it spell? Has something to do with the creation, salvation, recreation, and not least, environmental stewardship. And of course we have Adra with our altruistic message, but perhaps we could find that somewhere else as well. Positive identities with great purpose. Look just at this statement here. This is the man who did the first Adventist health study in my country. Still alive, not well now, but he's been a great bicycler through the years. Peter F. Hjort. It is impressive. I'm quoting from his article where he reported his Adventist health study in the medical journal in Norway. It's impressive that the Adventists, through their religion, have found the whole collection of health risk factors that modern medical research so painstakingly has revealed to us. Savor that one. Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? A statement like that from a man who is not one of us, as it were. And suddenly we think of our 8 rules of health, our 8 keys of health, as we keep calling them in my country, and see how it's more than just a 5-day plan to stop smoking when we talk about fresh air. We're talking about air altogether. We're talking about the fresh pollution and the air, or water. It's more than filling up these 8 glasses every day. We're talking about clean water. We're talking about water available. Digging wells in Africa, yes. Exercise for nature and health, well, it has something to do with pollution again. Do you walk to the shop or do you drive to the shop? Or more close, perhaps, do you drive to your exercise center or do you walk to it? Green nutrition, not least, temperance for society and health. Not just my health, but for society. Rest and restoration for us all. Trust and good relations, vertically and horizontally. We have these issues today. One day, Eden will be restored. We know that. With a new ecological balance and a good vegetarian diet. Dr. Kellogg has a marvelous poem about the Eden diet. Methuselah, who ate this wonderful diet. Until then, it is our prerogative and calling to exercise love and care with all that God has created. What we eat and what we do matters and affects us physically, socially, mentally, spiritually, economically, and ecologically. We as Adventists are really at the forefront on this concern of linking theology to ecology. What's needed? Not least for those of us who live in the frugal part of the world. Increased appreciation for life, food and other available resources. Something about waste in our Western world. Increased sensitivity to wastefulness altogether. And recycling, composting, water, conservation. Focused on the choice of diet. All this grain and soy that first goes through the cow before we can eat it. And so much is lost on the way. The creation concept frames the Bible with a clear responsibility towards earth, water, air, and animals. Both the creation story and the flood stories had room for animals. Now there's the diet. And then, of course, we can go into Moses and look at his Sabbath concepts that he got from God. And then the sweet one, how Jesus uses animals and what else is created as parables for the great thoughts of theology. Well, take this one. Doesn't it remind you of what you read in the papers today? There will be strange things happening to the sun, the moon, and the stars. On earth, whole countries will be in despair, afraid of the roar of the sea and the raging tides. Already in 87, people from these islands in the Pacific were speaking to the Brundtland Commission report. If this carries through, we won't have a country anymore. It'll be submerged. Man was given the task to tend the garden. Stewardship on behalf of God is at the center of creationism and Sabbath observance, isn't it? Now, if you were an evolutionist, you would accept the new development as a welcome solution to our overpopulation of our planet. Survival of the fittest. No worry, folks. Some will come out on top. No, we are creationists. We borrow this world from our children, it has been said. Stewardship on behalf of our children is a focal faith, especially if you believe that the concept of the family came from God and not as a sort of automatic development in a creation, in an evolutionary cycle. The modern environmental issues demonstrates the elements of social ethics in a plant-based diet. And of course, hope in the face of the anxiety. Because I read in Europe studies, social studies that show that half of the populations are worried about the future, ridden with anxiety about these doomsday prophecies that they get from IPCC and other researchers. We have a message there too. It's urgent. We've got to do it. Last few minutes, let me get back to this story here. Do you remember that man that was hurt? It was really his own fault. He should have known not to go there. And you have the priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan. A message of altruism, even though it was his own fault. Solidarity, neighborly love. Love exercised because it is needed. That's the agape definition, isn't it? I'm talking about altruism. And let us have a look, for instance, at the temperance movement. What is it that has carried the temperance movement forward? It's point one there, the attitude of act, an act of solidarity and loving your neighbor. We have a spirit, we have a religious and a non-religious temperance movement, as you may know. The socialist movement, the fathers of the socialist movement, they were temperance people. Why? Yes, because they wanted to guard the losers in society against the profiteerism of the liquor capitalistic production in the world. That was their big driving factor. Because profiteerism was killing the losers. There was the concern for others, the love for your neighbor. When I talk to Christian temperance people, I sit in leadership on some of these organizations in Norway, that is their big driving factor. Sure, there are other ones that have come. Most political measurements have to do with the total consumption concept. The more we drink in a country, the higher will be the problem drinking. And this is usually what regulates the laws concerning prices, price setting and availability of alcohol. Then we have the health and well-being. And we have been at the forefront, and it was good we were there when the discussion of wine for your heart came. Because we were able to challenge this, as we've heard at the lectures here. Lately, more issues have come that the political leaders are very fascinated by. The fact that drugs lead to use of illegal drugs. There is a link, a door-opening effect. Young people today use another argument. They talk about real experience, or if you like, real intoxication as compared to chemical intoxication. And young people like that expression all the more. The temperance movement, in other words, was built on solidarity and neighborly love, rather than discussions of health and harm. Very interesting. And look at the recent trends in legislation against tobacco. Now, we have known right since the end of the last war, since the 50s, at least, how harmful it is to smoke, for the smoker. But when the data really became strong to show us how harmful it was to the non-smoker, secondhand smoke, that's when all the legislation came. That's when we started looking closely at it. And back again to the World Vegetarian Movement, which is built on animal care and environmental issues. I'm not saying that we shall leave what we have, but we shall merge and can be able to use this for the good of the cause and also as a networking, as we want to build relationships to others. Altruism, a liberal prerogative. I read an article on that the other day, because there is a trend among Christians, perhaps even in our own church too, that the more conservative you are, the less fascinated you are with the issue of environmentalism. And the writer suggested, could this be a sort of hangover on the body-soul dualism issue that we listened to earlier today? Could it be that we consider the world as something evil, and it's salvation that is the good thing, so therefore we don't need to worry about that? That we come back in the same trap as the church in the Middle Ages, going around reading holy words or with incense to try to stop the Black Death, bubonic plague. Have we perhaps come something into that situation with the dualistic gospel here? No, this has to do with where we are. And let's have a look at some statements from our Lord. That they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Right there from the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus going around preaching, teaching and healing. We know those texts so well. It's the altruistic power factor that we as Christians can bring on and that we've used to such a marvelous advantage up through the years for ourselves and for others. Missionaries, ADRA, Pathfinders, Community Program, Health Expo, Retiree Clubs, etc., etc. When these things begin to happen, stand up, lift your heads, because your salvation is near. May I suggest that we're on the finish line. We're almost there, the last lap. And so we lift our heads and we try to do our utmost to help people in this world in the various ways that we can do it. Faith for Change is a new slogan among Christians in Europe. In attitudes, lifestyle, involvement, and environmental concern. Faith for Change. We've talked a lot about change here too. Just the other week they had a big gathering with the Christian Council of Norway and the Church Aid, Lutheran Seminary and so on. They had a number of days with adults and children trying to gem up this attitude of taking care of what God has given us in this world. And you see some of the cue words in their discussions in that context. The Minister of Environment came with this statement. In that connection, I'm grateful that the churches have taken on the responsibility to mobilize against our common threat of survival. This will increase the impact and the expectation from the climate summit in Copenhagen in December 2009. That's going to be a focal point in this context. And many churches are jamming up to be there and be part of it. I gave you this earlier today. This is where it has been, and it's wonderful. But perhaps it's even better there. We're taking a double factor in our future perspective on health and health enhancement. What can we do? We are a church of hope. We are the stewards for the Lord and for our children in environmental involvement, in personal care, and in the promulgation of hope against personal and global despair. Our message is our raison d'être, our reason for being here. Do you remember this man who sat in the tree? Do you remember he was let down? Do you remember what he did? He cleared the books. Do you remember that? He cleared the books. It's going to be different for no one. And he paid double, or was it quadruple, back to those that he had treated wrongly. He did something about it. He settled up and changed. Today, salvation has come to this house, said Jesus. The power of altruism is really where I think it belongs. Yeah, there are lots of references on this, so you can work on that yourself. Thank you so much.